Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, Google Play, TuneIn, anywhere you can find podcasts. Leave us a five-star review. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook. Send us any emails with basketball questions or advertising inquiries at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Our show is presented today by SeatGeek, the best way to buy and sell tickets online or on your phone. When you use the promo code LOBULLS in the free SeatGeek app, you get $20 back when you make your first purchase. I'm Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, Labor Day? How was your Labor Day weekend?
It was terrific. I did a lot of relaxing, which was kind of the opposite of what Bobby Portis has been having his friends do. In one of the great subplots of the offseason.
This is so great.
We are here for all your breaking Bulls news. Hard Bulls news. Bobby Portis from Fayetteville back to Chicago. He loves bowling. And apparently there's always a bet riding on every single, maybe not every frame, but every game, at least. And loser has to do push-ups, it looks like. And Bobby Portis' friends are doing a lot of push-ups this offseason.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what we don't know, and we'll have to ask him about this at camp. We don't know if this is really accurately reflective of the results of the stuff of the game, or if he's just like a selective documenter of this stuff. I don't see him documenting himself doing pushups. Maybe he just doesn't Snapchat the ones where he loses.
Yeah, that's true. You know, he did send a Snapchat out of himself running on the treadmill the other day, a friend filming it.
Yes.
But he hasn't done that for pushups, so maybe he never loses. Maybe he loses a lot but doesn't want people to think that. He has snapped his bowling score a few times, a 187, which was pretty solid.
Yeah.
He's also, like, I think it was 125, 126, not quite so solid on the lanes there for that round or that game. So Bobby Portis, been putting in some time at the bowling alley in the offseason, been putting in time trying to get better at basketball, which all the Bulls need to do. Obviously, but
he
but
is
it has
the most,
been good entertainment.
He is the most prolific bowler the Bulls have had on their roster since Andrew Bynum.
Is that? He got hurt.
He got injured.
That wasn't when he was a Bull, though, because his Bulls career only lasted 14 seconds or 14 minutes.
Something like that.
I forget that, though. So maybe early front runner for when the Bulls do their yearly bowling alley or bowling outing, Bobby Portis, clubhouse leader, for who's going to win that. On a little bit more of a serious note, and we should say that training camp's coming up in, what, 3 weeks?
3 weeks from yesterday.
3 weeks from yesterday. I believe we got a question from Cameron via email. Says, do the Bulls plan to keep the same defense they had last year? And it is a good question because all the same coaches are back right now, but a lot of different personnel, and the Bulls took a sharp, drastic decline last season after Joakim Noah got hurt. I believe that was in December, January, when Joe got hurt, and they went downhill from there. That was kind of the start of, they like to boast, I think, about like the 21-10 record they had or something.
Right.
And then it went south after that. Defense was a big reason why. Bulls ended up ranking 15th in the NBA in defensive rating, so right there in the middle, but they were stronger earlier in the year than they were later in the year. And now you got Robin Lopez at center, who we've talked about a few times on this podcast, as a good defensive center. A guy you can anchor your defense around, not all NBA defense or anything like that, or necessarily game-changing, but at least it's a starting point. We know of the other weaknesses at some spots on the roster. It's change at point guard with Rondo in for Derrick Rose. Obviously, Derrick wasn't always engaged defensively. John Paxton admitted that at the end of last season. Rondo, it's probably fair to say, sometimes is engaged defensively and sometimes hasn't been in recent years, but what do you think?
He hasn't really been since the ACL injury a few years ago when he was in Boston. But honestly, when we were doing some research after we got this question and we were kind of figuring out how to talk about it, we were looking at some of the Bulls' defensive numbers from last year, and I was shocked that they ranked as high as 15th, which is where they were in the league on the defensive end, especially considering how much worse they were than when Tom Thibodeau was there, and also just how much of a drop-off they took when Joakim Noah went down, like you said. A lot more problematic to me than their defense is just how bad their offense was. I think, according to NBA.com, they were 25th in the league in offensive efficiency, which, when you consider they brought in Fred Hoiberg last summer, and the whole point of bringing him in was supposedly that he was going to play a more free-flowing, up-tempo offense and really get them up to speed on that end. The only teams that were worse than them on on the offensive end were the Knicks, the Nets, the Suns, the Lakers, and the Sixers, which were five of the very worst teams in the league. And the Bulls, I mean, even though they weren't great, they were sniffing a playoff spot. So if anything, their defense was better than expected, and that's kind of what kept them afloat, which feels weird to say.
And it was really surprising, too, because, like, everything, I know I said this for certain, I know other people said it at various points, but I thought, initially, just trying to prepare everyone for the Fred Hoiberg era, saying the defense is going to see a drop in efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
After all those years of Tom Thibodeau coaching, 5 years, very, very well instructed, drilled to a T, and say what you will at the end, they didn't listen to Tibbs as well as they did early in his tenure. But it was shocking that it was like, oh, no big deal. Defense, as usual, just plug in 5 bulls on the court and defense will be great. And then, obviously, Joe got hurt and it changed. But to me, the Bulls weren't an aggressive defensive unit last year. You think back to the Heat when they were winning titles with LeBron going to the finals 4 straight years. They played like this blitzing all-out defense, like attacking pick and rolls because they had Chris Bosh, for example, a guy who moves well in the paint, kind of there in his prime, and they all bought into it. And that's never been the Bulls' MO under Tibbs. They kind of would sit back a little bit more in that pick and roll. They encouraged the mid-range jump shot for years. Last year seemed to me to be a lot of the same in that regard. They weren't chasing pick and roll guys out beyond the three-point line. I know The Athletic's written a little bit about it looked a little different in summer league. The Bulls were a little more aggressive. And this is a terrific question heading into training camp and what we need to see in the preseason and ask the coaching staff as well. But I don't think the Bulls should drastically change their defense and become really aggressive all of a sudden. I don't think that fits the personnel because Dwayne Wade, Rondo, they got some older guys there. You got Lopez. He's a good defender, but he's not a guy you want chasing people like 38 feet from the hoop or 28 feet from the hoop.
Even Taj. Taj is a pretty good defender, but he's more of an inside guy. He's not really somebody you want to have floating out to the perimeter guarding guys. That's something that Joakim Noah could do as a big man, and that was a strength that he had.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what he made his entire Defensive Player of the Year campaign on a few years ago, was like he just destroyed pick and rolls. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because they could switch. He could chase. I mean, he had long arms, and at that point was nimble enough to stay in front of even the quickest ball handlers. But I don't know that I see that as a fruitful effort for the Bulls this year. And I guess it brings up the other point. How much time are you going to pour into defense when it was league average last year and you were bad at offense? Like, is it the offense that needs to get solved for the Bulls probably? And, like, shouldn't that be more of your time and resources? I know people are like, defense wins championships. Not saying it doesn't, but you got to be a lot better at offense if you're the Bulls. And that seems to be the bigger question.
I would tend to agree with you. And I think the most important thing to figure out in training camp is just how well, and as we've talked about a million times on here, how well the hashtag three alphas can share the ball with each other. And, you know, whether Mirotić can fit in and make shots and, you know, establish himself as being valuable in the offense. So it's really more about how, I mean, all you really need from the defensively, we know Jimmy Butler's an elite defender. He's one of the best in the league on the perimeter. But as long as Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo are able to at least stay in front of their guys, like they have enough competent personnel defensively. If their defense can just be league average, what you need to see is a big uptick in offense. And if they can do that, if they can be a much improved offensive team, which I think they can.
Yeah.
But if they, you know, if they can do that, I think a lot of it was just kind of carry over with the personnel. Because, I mean, as we've talked about a million times before also, both during last season and a few times on the podcast over the summer, there was just such a malaise around last year because the personnel was exactly the same, even though the coach was different. Like, there was just the roster was pretty much the exact same from the last year under Thibodeau, so they had a lot of the same habits. There are, I don't know the count off the top of my head, but I think there are 7 or 8 new guys on the roster this year, so I think it is going to look pretty different.
Yeah, and back to the defensive part a little bit, I mean, Doug McDermott and Jimmy Butler, recently Jimmy posted on Instagram a snap of him and Doug. I don't know if they're in San Diego or Los Angeles. They're somewhere out west.
Somewhere with a beach.
Yeah, somewhere with a beach. A great view. Nice swimming pool, too. But they were doing defensive, like, slide drills on the beach, which was, I mean, it's funny. It's a terrific view, but that's where they're getting their off-season work in at. And it's a terrific view. But that is obviously always a focal point. Jimmy Butler's touched on it. Doug McDermott has always referenced him needing to get better at defense as well. But, you know,
I thought it was funny. Do you watch the show Ballers on HBO?
I do once in a while. I saw an episode recently, but I don't religiously watch
it. So there was an episode this season. It's a really good show. I highly enjoy it. But for those who don't know, it's a show about The Rock as a former NFL player who's now a financial planner for other NFL players. But there was a recent episode this season where this kid that they were advising who's coming out of the draft, who skipped the combine, there was a lot of controversy around that. And so they filmed a video of this kid running to some, I don't remember what the time was, but it was some absurd 40 time on the beach. And it was the most unrealistic thing ever. And that's what made me think of the Jimmy stuff. But, you know, speaking of the NFL, football season is coming up. And if you're an NFL fan, you should check out lots of the podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. You know, there are a lot of NFL ones. There's Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy Football. If you're a Bears fan, they play their first game this coming Sunday. And you should check out Locked On Bears with Arthur Arkush.
Yep, the Bears have a big season opener at Houston. And if you're looking for a road trip, how do you get tickets, Sean?
Well, it just so happens I have a solution for you if you want to get tickets for any NFL game, any NBA game, any concert, really any kind of event you want to. It's called SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the best way to buy and sell tickets online or on your phone. You can go check out their free mobile SeatGeek app, which you can use to look at every seat in the house for a deal score, which is 1 through 100. It will tell you, you know, it'll compare it to other seats in that section, other seats in the building. It'll tell you whether you're getting a good deal or whether you're getting a bad deal, so you know that you're getting the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek is extremely mobile friendly as well. You don't have to have paper tickets. If you buy a ticket in SeatGeek, it will just download it right to your phone, so you can just go right up to the venue and scan it, and you'll get right in. You can also set price alerts so that you'll know closer to a game or to a concert that you're going to if the prices drop or if it gets down into your price range. It's really convenient, and the best part of all is that if you go to the SeatGeek app, go to settings, click add a promo code, and type LOBULLS, L-O-B-U-L-L-S, you'll get a $20 rebate back after you make your first purchase, and that will tell SeatGeek that you came through from Locked On Bulls. It'll support the podcast. You'll get $20 back off your first purchase. You can get the best deal on tickets. Really, it's a win-win for everybody. But, you know, if you're looking at buying tickets for a Bulls game, for a Bears game, for a concert, really anything you want, SeatGeek is the place to go.
Talking earlier about Doug McDermott, Jimmy Butler doing work on the beach, and we got this question along that line, the Doug McDermott line from Sean via Twitter, and you can hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Hyken, at Cody Westerlund with any questions you have. But Sean says, we've talked a lot about Doug McDermott playing a small ball four for a few stretches here and there. What about Denzel Valentine as a small ball four for the Bulls? Interesting point. Denzel is a good rebounder. So I think that needs to come at the position. I would say defensively, he has a lot of work to do, especially at the NBA level, staying in front of people. Maybe if you're at the four, that's mitigated a little bit because you're on a bigger guy who's not going to take you off the dribble so much. But I don't have any inclination or indication yet that the Bulls are seriously thinking about that, Sean. I know it's the offseason. We don't get a ton of info yet. We're not in the daily grind of seeing things at practice and hearing about him. But what do you think about that possibility?
It's something that has actually been hinted at. Because if you remember at Denzel's introductory press conference a few days after the draft, he said that, you know, one of his strengths is he's a versatile defender and can guard one through four. So I would tend to obviously disagree with him about how good he is on defense. But the fact that he talked about playing four positions makes you think that it's at least something that's in his head as something he might be able to do, which means, you know, maybe it's something they'll try. Sean, the user, who, by the way, is not me, is the user that suggested this, and he made an interesting comparison between Denzel Valentine and Jared Dudley, who now plays back for the Phoenix Suns. He's been in Washington, Milwaukee the last couple of years, and he's really kind of developed a role as kind of that stretch four. He was a small forward earlier on in his career, but he's become kind of a stretch four. He can shoot from the outside. He can defend. I think that's an interesting comparison, and if Denzel can ever get to be as good as Jared Dudley, who's been a really solid rotation player in the NBA for a long time, then I think the Bulls would be happy with that. But I think he needs to get better defensively before that's a serious possibility.
Here's my catch on that, too. Offensively, when you say small ball four, we usually think the power forward who stretches the floor, hitting three-pointers from the corner or way out there. But the Bulls don't want Denzel Valentine to just be a spot-up shooter.
No.
They like... I mean, maybe his best attribute is his passing ability. I mean, he sees the floor brilliantly. He's very comfortable with the ball in his hands off the bounce, just making decisions, getting in the flow of the offense, and obviously he's displayed the ability to knock down three-pointers too, so I get that point. But if you're just using him as a floor spacer, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So if you're asking if he can be part of some small ball lineups and we just go positionless here or not married to the idea of him being the four on offense, then yeah, I'm for him being on the court in a small ball lineup. But to me, it's like McDermott is the guy that you're not going to ask Doug McDermott just to go one-on-one at the top of the key, right, take guys off the bounce, and go out there and have 7 assists a game. Now, that's something Denzel Valentine can do. He can have 7 assists in a game pretty easily if he gets some minutes because he sees the floor so well, creates opportunities for others. So I think that would kind of negate some of his strengths. So that's where I'd be concerned if I was the Bulls doing that. So they've hinted, too, like they want the ball in his hands. Before they got Rondo, they drafted Valentine, and Fred acted like he could get point guard minutes. Some of that's changed because whenever Rondo's out there, he's going to be the primary point guard, obviously, and the ball be in Jimmy's hands a lot, D-Wade's hands a lot. But at the same time, that's what he's best at. I think that would be the avenue for the Bulls to chase with him. And, I mean, he's intriguing, too, in going into training camp. You know, we've been talking about we want to do a Bold Predictions podcast here
in the upcoming weeks
regarding the Bulls. We want to think on those predictions a little bit more. You're welcome to send in predictions to us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with your wildest, crazy things.
We'll feature the best ones.
Yeah, we should. We'll feature.
We don't know what date we're going to do this yet, but we're going to do it probably next week because we kind of have what we're going to do the week before camp. But next week, we're basically after this week, we still have one more week with the kind of the struggle for content. So please send us your bold predictions. The best ones, they can be serious, they can be funny, they can be off the wall, they can be realistic, they can be unrealistic.
I wanted to have at least some sort of realistic possibility. Like, don't go out here saying Robin Lopez is going to average 27 points a game. We're going
to
ignore that.
LeBron James is going to demand a trade to the Bulls midseason. within reason. Within reason. If you want to say that Jimmy Butler is going to be first team All-NBA, yeah, I think that's kind of a reach. But like, if you have an argument to make for that, go for it.
Yeah, include a sentence or two with your argument. LockedOnBulls@gmail.com is where you can find us there for basketball questions, advertising inquiries. But I think just minutes-wise, for a good one for Denzel Valentine, like, how many minutes can he average if he goes out there and proves himself a lot early? They like him a lot, and the Bulls always draft these college veterans. Like, the point is to play him now. He's not a project. Like, he's very much a finished basketball player. I mean, obviously all players, all rookies need work, but this isn't a guy with a long time frame to develop, you know? He's older already, so they want him to contribute early, and it will be fascinating to see how many minutes he can get. I would like to see him on the court just because putting him and Rondo out there kind of fascinates me because they do see the floor so well together. And I guess that ties back a little bit to you'd have to play a small ball lineup, which the Bulls are willing to do. But, you know, throw Wade and Jimmy out there too with them on the wing, and I think you could really open up some possibilities passing, at least for the Bulls.
One thing that's interesting to keep an eye on with Denzel is, let's say he doesn't get a lot of minutes, that, you know, experimenting with him at different positions, that might be something the Bulls use the Windy City Bulls to do if they decide to send him down to the D League. They've got the team in Hoffman Estates. The season, I believe, kicks off on November 11th. So, there's an opportunity there for there to use the D League.
Your Windy City Bulls coaching and roster update. There is no update.
We're still waiting.
We're still waiting.
There's been some chatter, nothing really definitive, but
you know, someone who might end up playing some games for the Windy City Bulls this year is Spencer Dinwiddie, kind of the third, fourth point guard for the Bulls there.
He's an excellent Twitter follow.
Terrific Twitter follow. He's pretty much the 15th man on the Bulls.
Right.
But I just love this. This was a few days ago. Someone on Twitter asked him, Spencer, what do you want to improve upon this year in this upcoming season? And he responds, actually playing, LOL.
Well, which I mean, he has a point. He has
just
a point.
A tremendous, tremendous.
He hasn't
response.
Played that much in his first couple of years in the league in Detroit, so I can kind of see his point. And now I know a lot of that is because he's been injured and he's had some things that he's been dealing with from a health standpoint. But you know, considering what the Pistons after Brandon Jennings went down a couple of years ago, considering what their backup point guard situation was, they were playing like 80-year-old Steve Blake there, like. I don't know, especially before they traded for Reggie Jackson the season before last. Like, I just don't.
You thought he might have gotten a few more minutes. I don't. Things would have to happen on the Bulls for Spencer Dinwiddie to get much run, because I do expect Rondo to play I mean, Rondo's still... He had the knee injury a couple years ago, but he's still capable of going out there and giving 32 minutes a game. Then you got the rookie Valentine. Like, those guys need the minutes. You know what I'm saying? So I don't see Dinwiddie, unless something changes big time, playing much. But, hey, he's got a month to prove it in training camp.
Jaren Grant is another guy who was a first-round pick in the Bulls. Got him in the Derrick Rose trade, so I think he's going to get all the opportunities in terms of establishing himself as a backup point guard. But yeah, I mean, having a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, who is young and skilled, and Dinwiddie's kind of a big point guard too, so it's a little bit of a different look than some of their other point guards on the roster.
Very true. And we'll wrap the podcast up with this, but Marcus via Twitter says, can we get a petition for Barack Obama to own the Bulls? Now, Obama has expressed interest previously, acknowledged, I think he might have acknowledged via his press secretary,
right,
that he would be interested in owning an NBA team or having an ownership role in a group someday down the line. We know come a few years here, January 2017, I mean a few months, he's going to need a new
something
a
to new do with
job.
Himself. Something to do with himself. But
obviously he can hit up the speaking circuit. That's what many former presidents do. He'll have plenty to do. But Obama, own a share of the Bulls someday? Jerry Reinsdorf is 80.
I mean, I can't imagine the Reinsdorf family selling the team anytime soon. But yeah, I mean, if they were going to, it makes a lot of sense. Obama obviously has very strong ties to Chicago. He was here for many years. He is a White Sox fan, which is the other team that Jerry Reinsdorf owns.
Very true.
And you know, it would certainly. I'll say this. Like, we thought that kind of when Jay-Z bought a minority stake in the Nets, went back when they were the New Jersey Nets, that would be something that would be really attractive to free agents. I think Barack Obama being, like, part of the Bulls, even if it's just, like, a Magic Johnson with the Dodgers thing, where he's not, like, the actual owner, because I don't think he has the money to do that, but if he was, like, the figurehead of an ownership group, that would get free agents' attention.
It absolutely would, but if some advice for President Obama, if he's going to do this, like, he needs to lay off some of, like, the tweets that Magic does. They're a little too much when Magic references the Lakers and Dodgers. Just a little over the top, a little too cheesy sometimes. So maybe not do that.
See, but I find Magic's tweets delightful.
Why?
They're so consistent. Like, you know that you can just look on Magic Johnson's Twitter account and you will see exactly who won the game, who scored the most points, what he thought of the team's performance. He's very straightforward. Wait, I think it's great.
It's always just, like, the cheesiest takes, though. And a lot of times they're, like, late, too. Like, late to the party, it seems like. Doesn't it seem that way to you?
It does, but, I mean, it's better to be late and get it right than...
That's very true, a principle of journalism.
There's always somebody... Right, I mean, everybody's in such a rush. You're not going to see any of Magic's tweets show up on Old Takes Exposed, the Twitter
Magic
account.
Johnson pointing out that the Lakers weren't exactly good last year at basketball.
It's
breaking
true.
News.
It's true. It's hard to argue with him. You can say it's overly obvious or simplistic, but he's not wrong.
We should point out the Bulls are probably worth $2.5 billion, maybe $3 billion. Something like that if they ever went to the open market, wouldn't you think? The Clippers sold for $2.2 billion or so when Ballmer got them a few years ago. The Bulls have always been valued more than the Clippers, obviously.
They're in the
third
biggest market. They have the history with Jordan. They're like one of the... Them and the Knicks and the Lakers and the Celtics are the kind of marquee franchises in terms of, like, history.
I haven't studied Obama's tax returns. I don't know what his annual income is, but...
I don't think
politics... isn't favorable for loads of cash while you're in it.
I don't think he has $2.5 billion. So like I was saying, it would have to be a Magic Johnson thing where there were some investors who actually put up the money and he puts in just enough that he could be seen as part of the group and be the face of it the way that Magic has been with the Dodgers.
Yeah, and he loves basketball. That's been well documented.
He was at the
hooped a ton during his presidential
tenure. He was at
the
Bulls season opener this past season against the Cavaliers and got dapped up by J.R. Smith during a timeout in the fourth quarter, which remains the single greatest thing I've ever seen in person during an NBA game.
And then the Cavs went on to win the title.
It's true.
Just saying, Bulls. Just saying. Obama. Just a little fist pound for all the guards in the backcourt who are crazy on the Bulls team. Trying to think who that is. Jimmy's a little bit crazy sometimes.
Yeah.
Bobby
Portis would be the most excited to dap.
Oh, man, I can't imagine how pumped Bobby Portis would be someday. You know, 10 years down the line, veteran Bull Bobby Portis and Barack Obama has a share of the team. Bobby would be just pumped. Absolutely.
Do you think that Obama could beat Bobby Portis at bowling? And do you think Bobby Portis would force Obama to do some push-ups? I think he'd force him to do the push-ups.
I think Bobby would win. The White House has a bowling alley.
They do, so I'm sure he has plenty of practice.
So I don't know if Bobby has access to bowling alleys quite that easily at his residence. Obviously, a lot of these guys live in nice places. I don't know how many places in Chicago have bowling alleys.
Well, wait until, but my
apartment doesn't.
Once Bobby gets his second NBA contract, you know he's going to build a bowling alley in his house. And just every single, like, if he's got his friends who either live with him or are over a lot, he's just, like, they're going to get so tired of hanging out at his house because all he's going to want to do is bowl and make them do push-ups.
So our list of, like, important media day questions now is up to, like, 3.
Right.
Will the Bulls have a video tribute for Tibbs?
Yes.
Who will be introduced last during pregame introductions? And will Bobby Portis have a bowling alley in his residence when he gets his second big lucrative NBA contract? We're here for the important things.
We only are here for the important things. And just so you guys know, like, there's only 2 more weeks of this. Then we're almost to training camp. We've somehow made it. You guys have been awesome supporting us, listening to us. There's not been anything to talk about. We've been somehow making it work. We really appreciate your support, your feedback.
In 3 weeks, we will have dynamic episodes, like reciting Gar Foreman reciting the Bulls' accomplishments for the last 8 weeks or 8 years. We'll have that for you in 3 weeks.
Hard Bulls news every day. Like right now, we have hard Bulls news like once every 2 weeks. We're gonna have hard Bulls news every day starting in about 3 weeks.
Very much appreciate it. As always, follow us on Twitter at Lockdown Bulls, at Cody Westerlin, at Hyken. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Please leave us a 5-star review. Find us on Stitcher, Audio Boom, Google Play, wherever you find podcasts.
Tune in.
That's where we're at.
Make sure you go on SeatGeek. Thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring today's episode. Make sure you download the free SeatGeek app and put in the promo code LOBULLS. You'll get $20 back when you make your first purchase. And
until next time,
yeah,
take care, keep listening, and take it easy.